This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome on in to White Sox Weekly. And as you can hear, I am not Connor McKnight. It was Connor's last White Sox Weekly show last Saturday. And I do want to take a moment because Connor's way too modest. But he's on to a great opportunity at CHSN. And he's not obviously going to be somebody who you never hear from again on this station. I can promise you that Connor McKnight will still pop on occasionally, if nothing else, at least on White Sox Weekly from time to time. But Connor McKnight was here for 4 years, and I'm going to say four short years, but he certainly made an impact on the station. I know White Sox fans, everybody who listens, everybody who meets Connor McKnight knows that he's a great guy. He's a great broadcaster, but the old cliche, an even better person. And I can attest to that. I've gotten to know Connor fairly well over the last 4 years here. And he has always been somebody who, when you reached out, you needed anything, he was there for you. And I have no doubts now that he will be the on-field reporter for CHSN and still doing some play-by-play on occasion on television and on the radio here. So Connor McKnight is not going away by any means, but certainly he made an impact here at ESPN 1000. And so he will be missed on a day-to-day basis, but there's no doubt that we will certainly be hearing from him from time to time still on ESPN Chicago, your home of the Chicago White Sox. I am Jeff Meller. I don't know if I said that at the top. So I'm Jeff Meller, though. I'll be in doing White Sox Weekly here this week, and it is February 1st. That's right. You made it through January. Actually, a fairly mild January for all things. I guess we had a pretty tough week there where it was pretty cold. But for the most part, hasn't been a terrible January. And you've made it to February 1st, which, of course, means tomorrow, Sunday, is February 2nd.
Once a year, the eyes of the nation turn to this tiny hamlet in western Pennsylvania to watch a master at work. The master, Punxsutawney Phil, the world's most famous weatherman, the groundhog, who, as legend has it, can predict the coming of an early spring. So I guess the question we have to ask ourselves today is, does Phil feel lucky?
Then it's the same old shtick every year. The guy comes out with a big stick and raps on the door. They pull the little rat out. They talk to him. The rat talks back. And then they tell us what's going to happen.
They will indeed tell us whether we have six more weeks of winter tomorrow, Sunday morning, Groundhog Day. I can't tell you whether or not we'll have six more weeks of winter, but what I can tell you is that we are 12 days away from four of the greatest words in sports, pitchers and catchers report for the White Sox, of course. There's a few earlier dates for pitchers and catchers reporting, but for the White Sox, we are a dozen days away from pitchers and catchers reporting to Arizona for the start of what will be a no doubt thrilling Cactus League season. But I do love it when we can look into the near future and see that baseball players will be reporting. And it just gives you that, it kind of warms your heart a little bit sometimes in the dead of winter. So we are that close, 12 days away for White Sox pitchers and catchers reporting. And I have no doubt, too, we'll see plenty of field players who will be reporting as well. Again, White Sox Weekly here every Saturday on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. I'm Jeff Meller. Last week, I know Connor touched on it quite a bit. They were in the midst of White Sox Fest. It was a fantastic festivity out at the Ramona Theater in Bridgeport. I think the Sox did a great job putting on a fantastic event, something that if you missed it this year, definitely keep an eye out next year, because I think it's going to be something that you're going to want to attend in the future. I think they did a fantastic job. Smaller venue, but I think that just made, that added to the intimate feel of Sox Fest. Had that, you know, get a little bit closer to the players, to Chris Getz, you know, to kind of get a better feel for what this organization is all about. So it was a fantastic event last weekend. And, of course, the big news that the White Sox unveiled that they will be, or at least announced that they will be unveiling a Mark Burley statue at Wright Field this upcoming season, scheduled for July 11th. So that's a Friday. Make sure that you're going to go ahead and pencil that into your calendar right now, because I have to imagine that very well could be the most attended White Sox game this season. Wouldn't be surprised if that sells out fairly quickly. So, again, if you're thinking about it, remember, obviously, you're going to want to go ahead and grab some tickets early, because that's going to be a must-see event for any Sox fan out there. We're also going to celebrate Mark Burley coming up later here on White Sox Weekly, as we will count down his top five moments as a member of the White Sox. And no doubt about it, you'll want to be here to hear all of those great moments, because Mark Burley, always a fan favorite. Great to see him be honored. Can't wait for that. Again, July 11th, as the White Sox celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball. Hey, celebrate with us. Lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Again, I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Good news, White Sox fans. I know it's been a rough 12 months or so. Last year wasn't ideal, no doubt about it. But I have a little bit of good news for you, as Kylie McDaniel, we'll call him the prospect ranker for ESPN. He's the guy who he's kind of the Mel Kiper of the Major League Baseball draft when they air it on ESPN. He breaks down all the prospects. He released his top 100 list earlier this week, and the White Sox had the second most number of prospects in Kylie McDaniel's top 100. The White Sox landed 6 top 100 players, something to be very excited about. There's a little bit of a theme, too, if you want to pair them off. Kind of interesting, because as I'll run through this, but we're actually going to be talking with Kylie McDaniel as well later in the show. So make sure you keep us locked in so you can hear that, and we'll get more detail from Kylie. But I'll run through his list here, as, again, he ranked the top 100 prospects for 2025 in Major League Baseball, and the White Sox landed 6, and their top prospect on Kylie McDaniel's list, probably no surprise to anybody who is a White Sox fan, is, of course, checking in at number 18 on Kylie's list, Noah Schultz. Now, if you're a White Sox fan, you've probably become somewhat familiar with Noah Schultz. Massive, big, lefty, hard thrower. In fact, listed as 6'9". Apparently, we found out last weekend at Sox Fest, he's actually grown an inch. He's now 6'10". You know, he brings back shades of White Sox fans will remember John Rausch. Although Rausch was obviously a right-hander, and I can promise you, never threw anywhere close to as hard as how hard Noah Schultz throws. But Noah Schultz now, again, listed as 6'9", but again, I guess he grew to 6'10". So we'll see where it actually where he stops. Could we see ever the first ever 7-footer as a left-hander? I don't think so, but wouldn't that be something? But nevertheless, I'll get to the point here. So the number 18 prospect on Kylie McDaniel's list, Schultz, was a well-known prep prospect with clear first-round ability, but he made it to the White Sox at the 26th pick of the 2022 MLB draft due to an unclear asking price, missing the beginning of the spring with an illness and command trouble when he did get on the mound. The command issues make some sense, given his long arms at 6'9", create problems repeating his delivery, and his low arm slot helps create so much movement on his pitches that he'll often run out of the strike zone. Schultz threw just 27 innings through the 2023 pro season, but last year he threw 88 and a third innings, mostly in Double-A as a 20-year-old. It'll take at least 2 more healthy seasons to work him up to a full big league starter inning load, and there's some work to do fine-tuning locations and sequences in the upper minors. At this rate, late in 2025 or early in 2026, Schultz will force his way into the White Sox rotation, even if there will be a pitch or innings count and show his frontline ability. Interestingly enough, if you're looking for a possible comp, Kylie McDaniel says, reminds him of Chris Sale vibes. Gotta love to hear that. Obviously, White Sox fans very familiar with Chris Sale's career. And it was a very dominant one, not just for the White Sox, but even for the Red Sox as well. And now the Braves last year when he won his first Cy Young Award. So Chris Sale vibes, I will absolutely take that. So Noah Schultz, number 18 on Kylie McDaniel's list of top 100 prospects. Checking in at number 33 on McDaniel's list is White Sox shortstop Colson Montgomery. That comes as no surprise to most Sox fans because he has been their top hitting prospect for quite some time now at this point. A power overhit infielder who didn't have the 2024 that many expected. As McDaniel writes, Montgomery was a polarizing prospect in the 2021 draft class. Analytical models didn't like that he was 19 years old on draft day, but some clubs loved his multi-sport background, strong exit velos, and impressive in-game performance on the showcase circuit. Chicago took him 22 overall and quickly looked prescient as he became one of the better prospects in baseball. But his 2024 season raised some concerns. Montgomery is 6'3", 225 pounds, but is playing only shortstop, where he's limited laterally by his below-average speed, with third base seeming to be where he'll ultimately land. He has fringe-to-average bat-to-ball and on-base skills, with good feel for getting to his above-average-to-plus power in games, helping him project as a regular, but probably not as a star. Number 33, Colson Montgomery on Kylie McDaniel's list. Number 38, Kyle Teal. Of course, the White Sox snatched him in the Garrett Crochet, part of the Garrett Crochet deal. Another name you'll hear coming up as well was part of the Crochet deal. But Kyle Teal, catcher. He's steady but not flashy, everyday catcher who posts 2-3 WAR seasons, according to McDaniel. Teal steadily improved from a notable prep prospect to a stalwart in the University of Virginia lineup, while also growing from a possible long-term catcher to an above-average defender behind the plate. He has 20-plus homer upside, but he has taken a more balanced offensive approach and projects as a 260 hitter who hits 15 to 18 homers. He was the headliner in Chicago's Garrett Crochet return from Boston and should make his big league debut in 2025. Number 41 on McDaniel's list, and this is obviously a player who I'm very excited about as my voice octaves jump up here. Hagen Smith, their top pick in last year's draft, another lefty. The White Sox seem to specialize in lefties. And funnily enough, McDaniel says that he's a lower slot lefty slinger who could be a mid-rotation type soon with shades of Garrett Crochet. How about that? Maybe the future Sale and Crochet already in the White Sox system getting set to front the rotations of the future. We'll get more into Hagen Smith when Kylie McDaniel joins us here shortly in the next segment here on White Sox Weekly. Number 54 on McDaniel's list, Edgar Carroll. Another catcher. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, it's kind of funny. You can look at these and kind of take the six prospects on McDaniel's list and pair them off. And of course, you've got two dominant lefty starters, Schultz and Hagen Smith. You've got two catchers in Kyle Teal and Edgar Carroll. I mentioned Colson Montgomery. And now this one, I'm not going to say it's a reach. It's probably the most fun pair. It's Braden Montgomery is the other name who I'll talk about here in a moment. But you've got a couple of Montgomerys, you've got a couple of catchers, and you've got a couple of aces. I love how you can just break it down that way. So Edgar Carroll was the headliner in a trade from the Angels to the Sox back when they traded Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez. Opinions about Carroll's defense ability behind the plate vary. According to McDaniel, I have him as totally fine, around average, but some teams want an above-average defender. Maybe that's where Kyle Teal steps in. But ultimately, Carroll at other positions, you'll use him to get him at other positions just to get his bat in the lineup. That might also describe what the White Sox will do if Carroll and Kyle Teal are in the big leagues at the same time next year. And listen, we know that catching is an absolutely grueling position to do day in and day out. So if you've got two competent, if not better than competent, catchers behind the plate where you can alternate and have one DH every other day, maybe one go and grab a glove and play first base from time to time, that's a huge luxury to have a fresh catcher from behind the plate. So Edgar Carroll, number 54. And then rounding out Kylie McDaniel's list, number 92, Braden Montgomery. Now, maybe this is the one bat you want to get truly excited about because he could be the elite stick of the players currently in the White Sox organization. Because according to McDaniel, he's got 30 homer upside in a classic right field profile but with some contact issues. Montgomery was a tough sign in the 2021 draft out of Mississippi High School because of his commitment to Stanford as a two-way player. He was a solid player for the Cardinal for two seasons, then transferred to Texas A&M for his draft year and had a breakout season, eventually going number 12 to the Red Sox last summer. So the number 12 overall pick in last year's draft, part of the Garrett Crochet deal. Montgomery hasn't made his pro debut yet because he broke his ankle in the College World Series just before the draft. He did join Kyle Teal going to the White Sox as the headliners in the winter deal for Garrett Crochet. So there you go. A brief synopsis of Kylie McDaniel's top 100 prospects, six of which come from the White Sox organization, tied for the second most in all of Major League Baseball. I am Jeff Meller. Again, this is White Sox Weekly. Coming up next, we will talk with Kylie McDaniel, who authored that top 100 prospect for ESPN.com right here on White Sox Weekly.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Is right. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. All right. I mentioned Luis Robert rumors circulating. According to Fox Baseball bigwig, The Athletic, longtime baseball guy Ken Rosenthal, apparently the White Sox and Reds engaged in some trade conversations surrounding Luis Robert, who, of course, right now the most accomplished bat in the middle of the White Sox lineup. We saw last year that the White Sox ended up trading Dylan Cease in March. So you wonder, could that be the same case that happens here for Luis Robert as the White Sox get set to enter spring training? It's certainly a possibility. Ken Rosenthal did say, though, that it looks like those trade conversations, at least between the White Sox and Reds, have petered out just a bit, and they may have to go back to the drawing board, although that's certainly a possibility. Jim Bowden, who joined Foul Territory, and Jim Bowden, for those who are unfamiliar, former longtime general manager in Major League Baseball for both the Reds, coincidentally enough, and the Washington Nationals. Jim Bowden hopped on Foul Territory and talked about that trade rumor surrounding
the Cincinnati Reds, Philadelphia Phillies are two of the teams that have had discussions with the Chicago White Sox. And what the White Sox want in return for Luis Robert is they want two legitimate top five prospects in your organization. I mean, they want two really good players. And right now, the teams that have talked to them are willing to give one really good player, but not two. The reason being, when you give up a top prospect, that's a sure thing. You know, you're going to get control them for 6 years, et cetera, et cetera. Now, of course, in the Garrett Crochet trade, they got two legit top prospects, the catcher Kyle Teal and the right fielder Braden Montgomery, and they're hoping to get two more here, so they'll get four everyday players for the two stars that they trade. So I understand what they're trying to do. Now, they haven't been able to do that. So now the question is the player worth two good prospects? I would argue there's a pathway to say yes, but let's talk about the player. 2 years ago, we saw him at 38 homers. His rookie year, we saw him win a gold glove. We've seen him steal 20 bags, and we've seen the ridiculous athleticism and talent that's there. We've also seen a guy that doesn't always show up. We see a guy that loses focus in the outfield. We see a guy that doesn't seem to grind, doesn't seem to be 100% into the games. Now, partly because perhaps he's with one of the worst teams in baseball history, partly because there's no protection in the lineup. I mean, there's all kinds of excuses that we can give, but if you're giving up two really good prospects, I don't want just a potential star player. I also want a guy that wants to play, that's a winning player, because the last 2 years of my three-year deal with him is going to be $20 million a year, which makes it more difficult to give up. So I think what has to happen, to answer your question, Eric, I think he has to get to spring training, show that he's healthy, and be performing at the level we saw 2 years ago, playing with enthusiasm. And I think if that happens, there's still a chance he's traded by opening day.
Gesundheit, Eric Burns. Again, Jim Bowden on Foul Territory there, talking you through how a general manager might look at this trade specifically from the Reds' point of view as to why they were a bit reluctant to meet the asking price of Chris Getz. I'll tell you what, though, to quote Hawk Harrelson, I believe Chris Getz is in the proverbial catbird seat here because they have a very talented player, Luis Robert, on a team-friendly deal. That is, there's no reason why the White Sox need to trade Luis Robert right now. And honestly, build around him if you want to, or if somebody's willing to meet the high asking price for a very talented potential all-star player, then you can have a conversation and the White Sox can continue with this rebuild and helping to keep an eye on the future for when better days are certainly ahead. So I understand what Jim Bowden's saying, but I do think there's no reason for the White Sox to act hastily here. They're in the driver's seat, and it's a good spot to be in if you're Chris Getz, looking at what you want to do for the long term. And again, we saw it with Garrett Crochet. They didn't move him at the trade deadline, but it certainly worked out this offseason as they landed themselves both Kyle Teal and Braden Montgomery to help rebuild the White Sox farm system, which is something we're going to continue to talk about coming up next. I gave you a little bit of a primer with Kylie McDaniel's write-ups on his top 100 prospects. Kylie McDaniel of ESPN.com joins us next to give us the insights he laid out when the White Sox landed six prospects inside his top 100. We'll do that right here on White Sox Weekly.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, and as we've teased at the beginning of the show here, Kylie McDaniel, who just authored his top 100 prospects in all of baseball for ESPN.com, it posted earlier this week, is joining us now right here on ESPN Chicago. And Kylie, want to say thanks so much for hopping on, because I have to tell you, it was a tough season last year for White Sox fans, but you have offered a glimmer of hope with your top 100 prospects for White Sox fans, because the White Sox are tied with the second most number in your list. Six of the top 100. And before I get into some of the more specifics, Kylie, thanks for your time today. And I wanted to say, what do you think right now of the job that Chris Getz has done so far in trying to rebuild the farm system for the Chicago White Sox?
I would say it's been good. I'm not going to go like too far, because I think also when you look at a full-on tear-down, rebuild, treat everybody, you're almost like kind of guaranteed being a top 10 system. And the difference between the 8th or 10th system and the 2nd or 3rd system is really just a margin for error in, do these prospects turn into good players or not? I think they're going to turn into good players. If they don't, then it'll seem like a, you know, less good, maybe even bad rebuild. Like, there's, I think the White Sox are still in that sort of gray area where it's not obvious, whereas if they were, say, where the Dodgers are in terms of farm system, you'd be like, oh, it's kind of hard to mess this up. Like, they have too many good players. Like, there will be a good outcome here. If the White Sox typically, when you look at top 100 prospects, like half of them turn into basically not what you think they're going to be, if a little more than half of them do that, then this is will not be that great. And if a little more than half of them turn into what you think they're going to be or better, then it'll look great. So I think we're still in that like kind of middle area right now, but it's like on the table that this could go well, which I think is probably better than you would have expected a year ago, year and a half ago, you know, pretty recently in the past.
Totally fair. I get where you're coming from. Of course, the Dodgers have the most top 100 prospects in your list. And that should come as no surprise, because the way they're running baseball these days, they seem like they're playing in a completely different league. But okay, before I get into the White Sox, this is also a baseball show. So I want to pick your brain real quick about Roky Sasaki, who is your top prospect. Your thoughts on him, because no doubt we'll be seeing him starting in the majors, I would imagine, in Japan when the Dodgers take on the Cubs to start the Major League Baseball season.
Yeah, I think for the very casual fan, that all they know about Roky Sasaki is he is a pitching only Ohtani that is like the next guy to come over for the, you know, the small bonus, not the giant free agent deal like Yamamoto did. He is not quite as good as you may be expecting, because he had a not very good last season. Still has the same level of potential. he was still seen as the best sort of amateur prospect and early NPB player over in Japan, as Ohtani and some of these other, you know, really good players. He still could turn into that. I likened in my scouting report him to what Paul Skeens was in the minor leagues, which is where he learned the splinker, his best pitch, in the big leagues. He was the number one overall pick and considered the best pitching prospect in the draft, Paul Skeens was, in at least 10 years, and still learned his best pitch in the minor leagues. So that shows you how far he was from being an elite big pitcher when he was the best pitching prospect in 10 years. That's where Sasaki is. His velo went down a little bit last year. It's looks like it's more of a mechanical thing than a, you know, arm injury thing, or he lost arm speed or something like that. His slider got a little bit slower and a little sweepier. That seems very fixable. There's a number of things like that that I think are very fixable, in the same way that Skeens, like, needed to add a better changeup, and it turned out he came up with one of the best changeups in baseball with that splinker. And so if Sasaki can go down that same road of making multiple sort of small improvements that all add up to a big improvement, he could be one of the best pitchers in baseball next year. And so that's also why the Dodgers have the best farm system in baseball, is they added the number one prospect essentially as a free agent signing that didn't cost them anything. And he could be a perennial all-star starting this year. He also could be a maddening young player that hasn't quite put it together for a couple seasons, and some casual fans will think he was overhyped because he is still on that spectrum of, is he going to be pretty good or really good right away? We don't know. But long term, I think we know he will be a very good player, possibly a superstar. And there's not a lot of guys that have that possibility. And so that's why he's so exciting.
No doubt about it. Seems like a loophole the Dodgers are exploiting to make sure that they're atop your top 100 list when it comes to farm systems, Kylie. Kylie McDaniel of ESPN joining us here on White Sox Weekly. All right, so for White Sox fans here, we've been talking quite a while now about Noah Schultz and the possibility of him potentially being, you know, you mentioned it in your piece, and I'll let people go read it, but the comp, of course, Chris Sale, who White Sox fans on the South Side are very familiar with. Great, illustrious career. Sale won his first Cy Young last season. Noah Schultz, listed at 6'9". Kylie, I'm not sure if you heard about this. We found this out last week at Sox Fest. Noah Schultz actually grew an inch, so he's now 6'10", according to Noah Schultz. So just what do you think about the power left-hander who is the top prospect for the White Sox on your list?
Yeah, Sale is like the natural guy to go to because it is a very lanky, lower slot lefty, and it's actually difficult to come up with a comp that isn't an amazing player, because if you think tall, lower slot lefty starting pitchers, you go to Sale, Bumgarner, Randy Johnson. Like, there's not bad ones. You can't really think of a bad one. Obviously, there have been bad versions of that guy, but they're not very memorable.
Yeah.
So it's hard to not throw a lofty name out there, because going back to, you know, junior, senior year in high school, Noah Schultz was really tall, got really far down the mound, wasn't throwing super hard. It was kind of low 90s, maybe 95, 96 here and there. When he did that, he didn't really know where it was going. As you can imagine, 6'9 as a teenager, you're not going to be able to corral your limbs very well. That's why big men in the NBA, when they're teenagers, don't really know what they're doing and look kind of awkward.
Sure.
It's kind of amazing that Schultz
like a baby deer running on ice, Kylie.
Yeah, and it's like kind of amazing that Schultz is like pretty good at throwing strikes at this age, because any guy that throws this hard and has this kind of stuff doesn't really have to throw good strikes until they get to the upper minors, and anyone this tall usually doesn't throw very good strikes early in their career. So the fact that he is this tall, throwing pretty good strikes, his stuff moves all over the place, he continues improving. I think we've seen with guys like Tyler Glass now, when you have like a slider that moves across the entire plate, it's hard to throw it in the strike zone, because you can start it off the plate on one side, it'll end up off the plate on the other side. Like, that's difficult to do. And so the fact that he's able to do all these things is why it's possible to sort of imagine almost anything, and why you throw out those crazy comps, because there's not, again, not a lot of comps of mediocre 6'10" left-handers. They just don't really exist. It's just rare to see a 6'10" guy on a mound in general. But from like a scouting perspective, basically everything he does on the mound from a stuff perspective or a movement or velo perspective is plus. And so it's hard to not then see that, like, oh, there is ace upside here. But it is also very easy to imagine how it will not work, whether it's injuries, the velocity backs up, the strike throwing isn't that good. Like, there's still a number of things that could go wrong. Like, I think people don't realize how many ways things can go wrong, even for the best prospects in baseball, because it is so hard to go from a good young AAA player to a dominating big league player. I think, you know, Acuna and Tatis and guys like this, Vlad Jr., come up and are so good so quickly. People just remember those guys and they forget about the Lewis Brinsons of the world who are supposed to be great, and then you kind of forget about them and move on to the next guy. Again, half of these guys at the top of the list will not sort of reach their expectations. Mm-hmm. But with Schultz, he is such a singular talent without really comparisons in the last decade that he is one of the more exciting guys at the top of that list because he could be one of those face of the franchise, casual fans know who he is, fun to watch, you know, highlight reel, like all that kind of stuff. That's all possible. And again, like with Sasaki, that is not possible with most of the guys on this list. It is possible with Noah Schultz.
I love that you bring that up too. Like, and again, growth is not linear, as they always like to say. I think back to over a decade ago when Jerickson Profar was the top prospect in all of baseball, right? And he kind of got lost, had some injuries throughout the, you know, the early part of his career. And then sure enough, last year has a career year, signs a big deal with the Braves this offseason, or a fairly decent sized deal for, you know, a 30-year-old that you can get anyway. But it is crazy. You know, it is. It's just completely different than most other sports when we're looking at things. Kylie McDaniel joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Kylie, you have Colson Montgomery as number 33. You mentioned in your write-up that he right now he's playing shortstop, but that he could potentially move to third base.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that can catch the ball, can throw the ball, doesn't always give you all the arm strength. He'll do that sort of quick release, kind of flip it over to first. He's not a standout runner, doesn't have standout range. And so from a scouting perspective or a team-building perspective, these days, if you see a guy that is average to a little bit worse defensively, mm-hmm. which when you factor in his range, Montgomery is probably a fringy to below-average shortstop, most teams want an above-average defender there. Most teams have, you know, access to that kind of guy, whether it's a Jose Iglesias or Bobby Witt Jr. Like, there's obviously a whole gamut of how good the player is, but most teams want center field and shortstop to be above-average defenders. Some teams are even more strict and want an above-average defender at third base, you know, the first base, you know, scooping all the errant throws, things like that. And so when you see a guy like Montgomery, you think, okay, he can stand here in AAA, he can catch the ball and throw the ball. He's perfectly fine. He can technically play shortstop in the big leagues and will probably grade out a little below average when you get the defensive metrics. So he is a shortstop in that he's doing that and he's fine at that. But most teams would move him to third base or second base or, you know, wherever to get him in the lineup. And so I think he'll eventually play third, and that's more of a team needs, how you build a team. That's probably not the guy you want there. Some teams are okay. There's always a couple teams that have a below average defender at shortstop because that's just the way things add up, or they think he's going to improve, or, you know, whatever it might be. But with Montgomery, what you're going for is it is a big athletic guy with bat speed, with power, shows the components to be a plus on base guy and hit 25 homers and play in the infield. It's sort of the complete package, but mostly the offense is what you're going for here. Whereas the idea of if he's a shortstop or a third baseman is sort of irrelevant, because when you add together the positional value and then the defensive value, it's going to be basically the same regardless of whether he's standing at short or third. Just where does the team, where does it benefit them most to have him?
Now I'm going to go out of order here because I think the transition's natural. Colson Montgomery might not even end up being the best Montgomery on the White Sox, and that's because, of course, they acquired Braden Montgomery as part of the Crochet deal. Tell me a little bit about the, I guess, right fielder with the big bat for the future for the White Sox.
Yeah, so he was a well-known guy going back to his underclass days in high school in Mississippi. He was a tough sign. He was probably a seven-figure guy out of high school 3 years ago, but went to Stanford. And so obviously had a big number because he wanted to go to Stanford first 2 years. He's good, not great. There was some concern about his pitch selection and his bat-to-ball ability, but he's an incredible athlete with an 80-grade arm, is in the upper 90s on the mound as a reliever, which he won't do in pro ball, but he did in college, is a good runner that can fill in center field, but kind of fits better in right field. He then transferred through the transfer portal to Texas A&M for his draft year and made huge strides. He dramatically cut down how long his swing was, just kept his hands closer to his body. You would think that would cost him a lot of power. It didn't really. He still has 30 home run power, even with that limited movement. The weakness is there's still a little bit of chase and swing and miss at softer stuff below the zone. You can imagine a lot of changeup, sliders, curveballs in the dirt, that kind of thing. That's his weakness. He also is a switch hitter, but is much better left-handed than right-handed, so there's a chance he drops the right-handed swing, which then means can he face lefties as a left-handed hitter, because he's literally never done that before in his career. So that's the sort of concern, is the bat-to-ball. But the idea that he can be above average right fielder with an 80 grade arm and hit 30 home runs, you can obviously imagine this guy being an all-star. But he also broke his ankle in the College World Series, hasn't played a pro game. And so when there's that uncertainty that he's, you know, already 21, about to be 22, hasn't played a pro game, you're not positive the bat to ball is going to be there. You'd like to see that happen this season. And he's probably a corner outfielder, so he's got to really hit to justify that. It's a high variance guy. There's a world where this guy is not even really a big leaguer of consequence. There's a world where this guy's a perennial all-star. That's the kind of guy that gets you excited, but you'd like to have four or five guys at that level to be confident that one of them will turn into the guy you want him to be.
No, good stuff there. What about the other player who was involved, or at least the other headliner involved in the Garrett Crochet deal for the White Sox, Kyle Teal, the catcher who's also coming to the South Side, or at least he'll be part of the South Side's organization this year?
Yeah, I look at him in combination with Edgar Cuero, the other catcher that was actually acquired in the Lucas Giolito-Ronaldo Lopez deal. They're both catchers. They're both in the upper minors. They probably both be in the big leagues this season. Teal is an above-average defender, left-handed hitter, good, not great hitter, more of like you're hoping for sort of a league average to a little bit above production, but he's an above-average defender that does all the things you need back there. So he feels like he's the everyday guy, left-hand hitter. Again, not really a potential all-star kind of guy, or at least not a perennial on-paper guy. Any one season, anything can happen. That's what he is. Caro is the kind of guy that is not the greatest to the eye defender behind the plate. There's some teams that think he'll be fine as an everyday defensive catcher because he's very good at framing. Obviously, we don't know if that ability will be taken away with the automatic strike calling. It seems like Carroll would be the catcher of the future for most teams. I think for the White Sox, he would be the guy that keeps Teal fresh. He can play first base, left field, DH. You kind of get him in the lineup. And because he is more of a average to maybe a little bit below defender, depending on how exactly you feel about him, but is a better hitter with a little more upside and a little bit younger than Teal. It's really nice to have those two guys because, again, I keep saying, these guys in the top 100 are still 50-50. So odds are one of those guys will turn into what I just said I think they are. The other one will probably not, you know, playing the averages. Yeah. And so you have a future, you know, the catcher of the future, the guy you can build around. And then the other guy will probably be pretty good, be a big leaguer, be useful in some way, but maybe not be quite as good. And so in reality, when you have two, some casual fans may think, well, why do you need two guys there? Let's, you know, trade one of those guys and get the other guy. It's like, no, when you have two, you know you got one, and you're hoping you get two. And if you get two, you can figure out a way to keep these guys fresh and, you know, like I said, first base and DH and timeshare and things like that, and have a really good catcher position that can contribute to some other positions as well.
Now, I think that's a great point. Kylie McDaniel joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Especially catching, we know how grinding it is as a position. If you've got two competent catchers behind, you really can't go wrong. It would be great to have two really good ones on your roster that you can trust on a day in and day out basis. Injuries happen so frequently when you're a receiver just dealing with foul balls and everything. So having two potential good ones is never a bad thing inside your organization. And finally, we'll bookend it with another big lefty, the White Sox top pick in last year's Major League Baseball draft, Hagen Smith, coincidentally enough, we've talked a lot about the Garrett Crochet trade that the White Sox made. You said his comp could be another Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, Hagen Smith is another guy that, like Braden Montgomery, has been famous since an underclassman in high school. He actually had Tommy John in high school and then threw six no-hitters as a senior in high school after coming back from Tommy John surgery. And ended
six.
Up going to Arkansas because I think he thought, coming back from Tommy John, his velo wasn't up all the way, had kind of a funny arm action, wanted big money to not go to Arkansas because I think he saw a path to become a top prospect, which is exactly what happened. He was pretty good, a little bit wild his first 2 years as a starter, a lot of swing and miss stuff, is like you're saying, that lower slot sort of slinging lefty. And then his draft year last year sort of solved all of that stuff. The command got better. Still more of a control over command guy, throws it over the plate, but everything moves so much you don't have to necessarily be as fine with the locations. Heavily fastball slider, again, lower lefty fastball slider. You can imagine that guy. That's, you know, that Bumgarner, Sale, Randy Johnson sort of style of pitcher. The sort of issue with Hagen Smith is third pitch, whether it's changeup or curveball, doesn't throw it that much. So you kind of need to develop that to get righties out more often. Again, he's more of a control over command guys. You can imagine a world where if that regresses a little bit, he might walk too many guys. And the last part, which is a little more in the weeds, if you look at we all know that there are things about lefties and lower slot guys and guys with deception that you can't really capture on paper, that sometimes are hard to explain why this is working. If you look at the TrackMan data of, like, you know, this pitch moves 8 inches in this direction, 4 inches in this direction, and you look at how you would grade out his stuff just from that perspective, kind of the on paper analyst version of things, he's drastically outperforming what his pitches should be doing. But then when you sit and watch him, his pitches look very good, like they're performing the way they should. And the sort of the way that it was explained to me by somebody at Arkansas that coached him was, this guy gets insane swing and miss in the zone. And so as long as he keeps the pitches in the zone, he will continue to outperform how people think he's going to pitch. But if he starts overthinking it, pitching backwards, trying to nibble on the edges, that's when he gets in trouble. And so there's that sort of intangible thing that he's doing, that the way that he puts it all together with his arm action and his arm slot and the deception and the tunneling and all these sorts of things that are hard to quantify, his stuff plays up. And so if you can just have him start a pitch down the middle, sometimes it's a fastball, sometimes it's a slider that almost hits somebody in the back foot, that's what he is, and that's why I think he's going to be a good big league starter. And the question is he going to be a frontline starter, an ace, that sort of Garrett Crochet kind of guy, or is he going to be a good, not great, you know, third starter and nice to have? Like, that's sort of the range of possibilities for him, which when you contrast that with Braden Montgomery, who has that wild range of might not even be a good big leaguer or could be an all-star, Hagen Smith is almost guaranteed to be a big league starter of some quality, and we're just trying to figure out what quality that is, which is why I think he'll move quickly, because he needs to be at that, those upper levels, AAA big leagues, to really be tested, to really figure out what the answers are to those questions, because he just torched the SEC last year and kind of needs to be facing these 25-year-old hitters to figure out how to do the finer points of pitching in the way that he needs to reach his potential.
Wouldn't be surprised if we see him pitching at Wright Field sooner rather than later. Great stuff. Appreciate all the insight. Kylie McDaniel, again, his top 100 prospects posted earlier this week on ESPN.com. Also, the top farm systems just dropped within the last day or so. So those are a couple of things you're going to want to check out. We whetted your appetite a little bit for the Sox fans, but of course baseball fans are going to want to see the complete list. So go ahead and check it out on ESPN.com. He is Kylie McDaniel. Thanks so much for joining me, Kylie. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, and one more thing I'll leave with a fun note from the farm rankings. The White Sox have the second-rated farm, and the difference between the Dodgers and the White Sox is a little bit less than Roki Sasaki. So when he graduates about a month and a half to 2 months within in the season, everything stays the same. There's a chance the White Sox will have the best farm system in baseball by the time we get to June 1st.
Love it.
I don't know if that's how it's going to play. There's like a, you know, 60 other guys that are in play depending on if they go up and down or graduate or whatever. But that is technically possible 2 months into the season. That may happen.
Listen, we've all kind of become a little bit of prospect huggers here after the last season that White Sox fans endured. So we will absolutely take it. Again, thanks, Kylie. Appreciate it, man.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Again, that is Kylie McDaniel. Check out all of his work on ESPN.com. Does a great job keeping tabs on all of minor league baseball and all your top prospects around minor league baseball. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Don't forget to stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. I'm Jeff Meller. When we come back, we'll close things out on this edition of White Sox Weekly, right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. As we wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly, thank you to Kylie McDaniel for joining us today, breaking down his top 100 list, in which the White Sox placed six prospects, which is the second most in all of Major League Baseball. As I mentioned, he also has a new article out ranking all of the 2025 Major League Baseball farm systems, and the White Sox check in at number two. And as he told us, they may actually move up to number one once Roki Sasaki graduates to the majors, which we expect will happen almost immediately for the Los Angeles Dodgers. So could be good days ahead very soon for the White Sox. Also want to say thank you to Brendan Riley for producing today's show, our executive producer of White Sox baseball here on ESPN 1000 and, of course, White Sox Weekly. Finally, some few transactions that came down this past week worth keeping an eye on. Max Scherzer signed with the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, Max has been a multiple Cy Young Award winner, I believe three to his name. Of course, he's 40 years old. He's dealt with hamstring injuries the last couple of years, cutting him short. So the Toronto Blue Jays ink Max Scherzer, and they'll try and get him back to throwing like an ace when healthy. Carlos Estevez signs with the Kansas City Royals to become, in all likelihood, their closer this year. So inside the division, you'll have to keep an eye out. Hopefully he won't be closing out too many games against the White Sox this year, as hopefully better days will be ahead. That'll do it for us, folks. Thanks for listening. This is ESPN 1000.